at 613-861-5713. And the winner will receive a pair of tickets to the Saturday afternoon performance of Rhonda Vincent. With that, the next question will win the tickets. And that question is, in what year did Bill Monroe first form his Bluegrass Festival? And also, where was it located? With that, the first ones to call me with the correct answer will win the tickets. So with that, I would like to welcome y'all to the third and final hour of today's program. And that number again is 613-861-5713. And if you can't get me through there, just email me at waybackwoodlock@gmail.com. Good luck, everybody. See you at the South Grenville Bluegrass Festival on Saturday.
Keep on shining, shine on the one that's gone and proved untrue. Blue moon of Kentucky, keep on shining.
Jenny Lynn, to me that's where fiddling begins. Lady, sundown on a hill above the town. Rock a pin, play the fiddle, Lord, how it would ring. You could hear it talk, you could hear it sing. Forget that mournful day when Uncle Ben was called away. They hung up his fiddle, they hung up his bow, and knew it was time for him to go. Late in the evening, about sundown, on a hill above the town, Uncle Ben played the fiddle, Lord, how it would ring. You could hear it talk, you could hear it sing. Play the fiddle, Lord, how it would ring. You could hear it talk, you could hear it sing.
And with that, friends, we're back here on the Way Back with Johnny Whitlock Show, and it's, of course, coming to you via the Whitlock Ranch and Studios in Cornwall, Ontario, but also via www.osherox.com and CFRC 119 FM. With that all mentioned, it is a great honor to welcome yet another interview guest of honor to our program this morning, who is appearing at the South Grenville Bluegrass Festival this coming week. With that mentioned, the next guest has been enjoying a 60-year career in bluegrass music, having first walked onto the stage at the age of 7. Now all these years later, he's still performing bluegrass music. With that, he has become a true friend of mine over the years and a true legend in the bluegrass field. Please welcome Mr. Larry Efaw to our program today. Now I'd also like to mention that this began as a 20-minute interview, but it quickly became a full hour interview. You can hear the full interview at our YouTube channel at Way Back with Johnny Whitlock. In the meantime, here is a very cut down interview with our dear friend and a true legend in his own time, Mr. Larry Efaw. Following this interview, we will hear an all time favorite of his that him and his Bluegrass Mountaineers recorded called The Old Home. With that, here's Larry.
Hi, Johnny. I want to thank you so much for having me on. I've been looking forward to this for a good while now.
Well, it's a pleasure to see you still coming up to Canada and that. And I understand you also have an upcoming bluegrass festival up in Spencerville area called the South Grenville Bluegrass Festival.
We sure do, and I am looking so forward to it. This here will be their 10th year anniversary.
That's right.
And I believe this will be my, if I ain't mistaken, I believe it'll be my third time there.
Oh, wow. Nice, nice.
It's always just a beautiful place, and Kim and Lisa, they've got everything all together, and they treat people, you know, the way they should be treated. They're wonderful folks, and they work hard. I tell you, it's not easy promoting these shows and putting these shows on. It's a lot of work behind the scenes.
That's for sure,
Yeah, not just booking the bands and then it's all done with. There's a lot of work for them, and they work hard, and I'm looking so forward to the 10th anniversary here, and I'm just glad to be a small part of it this year for them, and I'm looking so forward to it. We will be there for 3 days. Actually, the festival is August 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th.
Yes.
And we'll be there the 8th, 9th, and 10th, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and it's at the Spencerville there at the fairgrounds. It's a beautiful fairground.
It sure is. Yes, I've been there many a times, and I hope to see this year too. Yes,
absolutely. And I like the way it's laid out. You know, a lot of festivals that we play, you're out in the hot sun beating down on you, and they've got tents, but a lot of times, you know, the tents ain't big enough for everybody to get out of the sun.
Very true.
You know, that's the nature of the music. But this here, you know, it's all covered and it's nice in there and you don't burn up, and in case of rain or anything like that, Joe, keep right on going.
That's right.
If you want to go back to your camper, you can go back to your camper.
That's right. Yes, for sure. So let's go back to when and how your musical career first.
Actually, I guess I was just basically brought up with lived in Houston, you know. My dad always played. My mom, dad would get the guitar out and sing, and I was just always brought up with it. And actually, from the time I was able to talk and walk, I always loved the sound of the bluegrass music, the banjos, fiddles, mandolin, and so on and so forth. And I guess it was just probably in my blood, you know.
Exactly, yes.
Before I was even on this earth, you know, I heard it, so.
For sure.
Yeah, now, I guess it just grew on me.
So you do have a musical background, I understand.
I do.
Yes.
Absolutely, yes.
I see. So would it be safe in saying that you first picked up the mandolin at age 7?
Well, that's actually when I first, at age 7, was actually when I first walked on the stage with my dad.
Oh, wow.
But I was probably around 5 years old, I would say. I told my dad and mom both. I said, I would really like to play the mandolin, probably because it was a smaller instrument. And I was little.
Yes.
And, you know, but I always did like the sound of the mandolin, so.
Well, it's a beautiful sound. Yes.
It is. And so Dad went out, and he went actually all the way up. At that time, we was living in Pennsylvania, but not too far into Ohio. And Dad knew this guy up here, and he had a mandolin that he told my dad. He said, if you want to come up, he said, I'll sell that mandolin to you for $35.
Yes.
Well, Dad went up. And he bought mandolin, and he brought it back, and he opened it out of the case, and he set it down, and he told me, he said, now don't you touch that thing. Well, you know, at 5 years old, a little kid, you know, if you tell them don't touch something,
they want to.
Just like the kid with a piece of candy. If you lay a piece of candy down and you tell them, you know, don't touch that candy, what's going to happen? You're going to get that candy as soon as they turn their back.
That's right. Exactly. For sure. Yeah.
I think Dad did it on purpose, you know. So I went and got the mandolin, and I didn't know nothing about it. I couldn't play it, you know. I couldn't even tell you if it was in tune or not. Dad really couldn't play the mandolin, but he did know 3 chords on it.
Okay.
And he showed, and he worked with me there, and I got 3 chords down, and he got his guitar, and he'd say, this is G, this is C, and this is D. And he got his guitar out, and progressively, you know, I was able, you know, to chop along with him and change chords. Of course, he would trick me sometimes. I thought he would just go G, C, and D, and sometimes he would go G, D, C, then D. You know, he'd trick me to see if I could, you know, change chords, watch his fingers and change chords when he did.
Exactly.
And when I was able to do that, it was probably around 7 years old. That's when I actually started to walk on stage with Dad and with the band, and I stood back in the back as far as I could because I couldn't be any more shaky or scarier, you know. I was scared, you know, to be out there.
For sure, for sure.
Then I started, you know, from that point on, I started, Dad couldn't pick the mandolin, so I just got some records out, stuff like that, basically taught myself, went out to the festivals, you know, and
some 6 decades later, you're still doing it.
Exactly. Yes. Watching people, what they were doing, you know, with the mandolin, and asking them if they would show me this or that or something, you know, I couldn't figure out. About 9 times out of 10, you know, they would do it. I was proud that they did.
I see. Now, I understand the Mountaineers was originally your father's band.
It was. Actually, my dad, prior to 1963, that's when he actually started the bluegrass band.
Okay.
But he had a, prior to that, for a couple years or so, he played the guitar, and he had another guy that played the banjo.
I see.
And of course, it wasn't a three-banger style, you know, like Earl Scruggs played. It was like the two-banger style.
Oh.
One finger pick there.
I see.
But it sounded, you know, it sounded real good, and they went more or less at that time, like Lonzo and Oscar. It was more or less like a comedy show.
Yes.
And they called it Beanpole and Jughead, and my dad was Beanpole.
Okay, I see.
And they would take their pants, you know, and cut them different ways, and wear different socks, and goofy hats, and all this and that. And Jughead, he moved off. And
a
year or so after that, he moved off, and Dad had no one. So he just went around, you know, some of these places, some where they was playing bluegrass music at. awesome. Has stations, people just getting together and picking, and Dad finally found a banjo player and a fiddle player, and Tom just put a little band there together, and they come over to the house and practice and play, you know, and stuff like that. Now he got so to where he felt anyhow that he'd go out and do a few shows.
Yeah,
so he'd just go out, you know, and do some shows, you know, here and there, you know, and stuff. And he at that time about the only place, you know, to play was in some loungers, you know, and stuff like that.
Yes.
And so they would go there, you know, and play 2 or 3 hours. Then he started playing for some square dances, and he got out of the bar scene. He wouldn't play no more bar stuff. And then that's when he got into the festivals and the state shows and auditoriums, stuff like that. And that's basically when I started with it.
What is your thoughts between country music and bluegrass? I know a lot of people have different opinions on it, but to me, the bluegrass is keeping more to the roots of the music.
You know, I mean, I guess I'm old school.
Yeah.
I was brought up with the first generation of both country music and bluegrass.
Exactly.
And actually, you know, the difference between bluegrass music and country music is non-electrified to electrified.
Okay.
They're both pretty much, you know, is actually pretty much the same.
A lot of
bluegrass songs, you know, that you hear, even Bill Monroe did, you know, and stuff like that. You hear it was brought in, you know, a lot from Johnny Cash up to Merle Haggard to Buck Owens to all of them guys. And vice versa, you know, Dolly Parton growing in my Sweet Baby's arms, you know, and stuff like that. And it's pretty much same. But back on what you was really talking about, yes, you're right. The bluegrass seems to be keeping maybe a little bit more closer to its roots these days than what some of the country music is. But on the same end, there's also a lot of bands out there that is not doing it.
True. I find that lately, yes. That's true.
Yeah, a lot of plugging in, you know, and stuff like that, not using the microphones like Bill and that. When it started, you know, they used one microphone, Bill Monroe, you know, and all of them.
That's right.
They used one microphone. Everybody gathered around that one microphone, you know, and they knew how to work that one microphone, and it sounded great. It was awesome. That was the best sound, you know, anybody could get. But the bluegrass does seem to be keeping it a little bit closer, but there is a few of them out there that's straying away. You know, from not that they can't do it, they basically can do it,
but won't.
A lot is that they won't, and
yes.
I think a lot of it is they're trying to reach out to some of the younger crowds.
I see. So you also worked with Ralph Stanley, I understand.
I did. I recorded 2 CDs with Ralph Stanley, and Ralph had asked me a few times. Well, actually, it started. Ralph was playing here in Ohio, and I was 14 years old at that time. Well, Ricky Skaggs was his manly player, but Ricky couldn't show up that day for one reason or another. I don't know why, but Ricky wasn't there. And for somehow, I got enough nerve to walk up and ask him. I said, "Would you mind, Ralph?" I said, "I play mandolin some." I said, "Would you mind if I just set in with you on one or two songs, just jump the mandolin behind you?"
Yeah.
And he looked at me and he said, "Well, do you know my stuff, son?" I said, "Well, I think I do."
Yes.
And because I always loved the Stanley Brothers, Ralph Stanley, and I said, "I think I do." So he said, "Well, go get your mandolin." He said, "We're going on here real quick." So my goodness, I ran, and I didn't have a very, very good mandolin at that time. So there was a guy that had an old Gibson Lord Lore there that I knew so long. Actually, he's the guy that went to Sebring High, and he gave me that mandolin, you know, or Dad bought it off of him for $35.
Yes.
And I knew he had that Lord Lore there, and I went and tried to chase him down, and I just went running through that park. Finally, I found him. I said, "Can I play your mandolin?" I said, real quick, and he said, "Why, sure." He said, "But who are you playing with?" I said, "Ralph Stanley." He said, "Well, absolutely." So he walked real slow, and I'm like, hurry up.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
He went and got it, and he handed it to me, and I got backstage back there where Ralph was tuning up, just as he was tuning up, and I opened the case up, and he said, "My goodness," he said, "that's a lure, isn't it?" I said, "Yeah, it is, Ralph." And he said, "Is that yours?" I said, "No." I said, "I just borrowed it," I said, "from a good friend of mine."
Yes.
And he said, "Well, get it out." He said, "Let's get it tuned up and see what you can do." And he started off on, I'm right riding on that midnight train.
Okay.
And I stood there and just chopped on it, you know, a little bit. Halfway through the song, he said, come on. I said, well, when are you going to call me up? I said, does that mean I can chop a song along with you? He said, no. He said, you're going to do the whole show with me.
Oh, wow.
And I tell you, I just started shaking.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
Yeah, and everybody knew me, you know, because it was my hometown. You know, everybody knew me there at the festival, and they started hollering up, let Larry play one. Let Larry play one. Let Larry play one. And pretty soon he said, well, we're in C-Court here, he said, right now. He said, but we're definitely going to let this young boy back here, he said, play you a song. He said, he's doing a good job. And he said, we're going to let him, he said, but we're going to let him play it by himself. And oh, my goodness, sweat started rolling down me. I thought I was going to pass out.
Yes.
And I said, my goodness. And I got thinking. I said, well, why don't we just play Cindy? I said, I think I can play that in C-Court. You don't have to change chords. And Ralph said, okay. Kick it off, and I did, and I kicked it off, and after the show there, my dad came up and shook his hand. That's the first time I ever met him. Yeah, my dad shook his hand. Dad thanked him and told him, he said, it meant a lot to him, and he said, my son just thinks the world of you. He said, you're his idol.
Exactly.
And he said, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. He said, what's your name? And Dad said, Edward E. Paul. He said, well, Mr. E. Paul, he said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. He said, you see that motorhome right there? He said, I'm just going to take this boy with me. He said, I'm going to put him on the road with me.
Yes.
And my dad said, well, I think he really does need better school, you know.
Yes, yes.
He didn't know really how I was to answer it, you know, and stuff. But every time after that, Ralph, you know, if he seen me at we was playing the same show or somewhere, he would always ask me, he said, get your mandolin. He said, get up here and pick with me, you know.
Exactly.
Then he got so, he said, do you sing? I said, well, a little bit. And he said, well, let's sing a song together. And we would, you know, we'd sing something. Then after Charlie Sizemore, you know, left the band there and stuff, Ralph called me and wanted to ask me if I would take the job, you know. And I told him at that time, I said, Ralph, I said, I would love to. I said, that is an honor and a half.
Exactly.
And I said, you know how well I think the world of you. I said, I'd do anything for you. I said, but I got a little family going here and stuff. And I said, it's really hard, you know, to do that. And he said, well, I understand.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, and we'll see you at the South Granville Bluegrass Festival coming up this month. Yes.
Absolutely, yes. We're going to invite everybody out August the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th at the South Granville Bluegrass Festival there. It's going to be a great show, folks. Just come out and be with us, and let's build that campground.
Exactly, that's right. So with that, we'll talk to you soon, and it's been a pleasure, Larry, and I would love to have you back on the air at some point.
Johnny, I thank you so much for having me on, and I really appreciate everything, and want to thank you for all you do for the festivals. If it wasn't for you, you know, our music, anybody else's music is not going to be heard, and a lot of times they ain't going to know where the festival's at. Okay, bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Waters flow and wildflowers grow. Back to the old home on the hill. I know that your old mother's waiting alone on the hill, with silver in her hair and twinkle in her eye. Oh, cabin home on the hill. I'm going back to the old home, back to a place loves well, where sweet waters flow and wildflowers grow. Back to the old home on the hill. Years gone by since I saw her. I've traveled many of miles,
Well, now, friends, it has finally come to this point in the program to pay tribute to an interview I got to do with the Queen of Bluegrass Music this past week. And it has finally come to the part in the program where I would like to share a very special interview with Grand Ole Opry member and Queen of Bluegrass, Rhonda Vincent, with y'all. Now, I know we usually play more music than we have been throughout the show today, but this weekend is a very special program dedicated to the 10th anniversary of the South Grenville Bluegrass Festival. With that mentioned, the headliner for this anniversary is our next guest, the Queen of Bluegrass herself, Miss Rhonda Vincent, who today is a true legend of our beloved music. Miss Rhonda, who is appearing at the festival for two sets on Saturday afternoon and evening, coming up on the 9th of August, that's Saturday coming up. With that mentioned, I would like to welcome to our program Miss Rhonda Vincent, the Queen of Bluegrass. Following this interview, we will hear a newer recording by Rhonda and her band, The Rage, and is none other than a song called I Miss Missouri, which I understand legendary soul of country music, Miss Jeannie Seeley, wrote for Rhonda. With that, here's our Queen of Bluegrass Music herself, Miss Rhonda Vincent.
Thank you so much. Great to talk to you.
I've interviewed you a couple of times before, but it's a pleasure to have you back on the air.
Well, yes. Thank you.
So let's go back to when and how you came into bluegrass. I know you were born into bluegrass music.
That's right. Yes. Musical family. Yeah, people say, how did you ever choose bluegrass? It's like, I didn't really choose it. It kind of chose me. It was like, it was a way of life. It's what my family did. And so five generations of my family have played bluegrass music.
Amazing.
Yeah. I started singing when I was three. So when I started singing, then I just automatically joined the band.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, so it was like, okay, you're on.
So you were thrown into it more or less.
I just thought everybody was at their house doing the same thing.
Exactly.
It wasn't like, you know, would you like to do this? It's what my family did, you know, and it was something that they played daily. And my dad would pick, and eventually when I went to school, dad would pick me up from school and we would play till dinner. And after dinner, friends came over and we'd play till bedtime.
I see.
So yes. It was a very intense life of playing music. It's what they loved. And, you know, it's fun.
Exactly.
It was the way it was. But it was fun until I got to be a teenager. I found out that Barb Wheeler and Tommy Parsons were at the skating rink, and then I was a little upset about that because I didn't get to do that because my family's still playing, you know.
For sure.
But I'm so grateful now. You know, yes, that's kids, and they prepared me for what I do. So I'm very, very thankful to them that they, you know, that they did that now.
True.
Well, you know, when you're a kid, you got other things in mind. There's other things you want to do.
And there's other things, like you say, that you want to do, and other things that are happening. And exactly, I understand. Yes.
Yeah. I think, well, I grew up in the family, and it just basically made its way then until what I do today.
So, today.
And like exactly. they prepared me.
Yes.
I'm very grateful.
So I understand when you went solo, though, that your dad was not entirely happy about it.
He was not happy at all about it. No, he's like, I said, what do you expect me to do? He said, I expect you to play with the family all of my life. You know?
Yes.
It was probably a selfish motivation, but you know what? At least he was honest about it. And he wasn't happy that I was going to do my own thing, but later he embraced that and he was very proud.
Okay, so he did embrace it finally.
He would be so proud to know that I'm a member. You know, he did not live to see the day that I was a member of the Grand Ole Opry.
I see.
He would be so proud of that, though. That would be... You know, that would have been his greatest accomplishment.
Yes,
he would love that.
So, also, would it be safe in saying that Jim Ed Brown brought you to Nashville?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yes.
I mean, I did the show You Can Be a Star, and he was my first experience of I guess, not necessarily Nashville, but performing away from my family for the first time.
Okay.
Because I had only been, you know, I had only been in the safety of my family. And that's a whole different thing when you're working with someone else.
That's true, yeah.
You know, so and learning to, you know, learning that, because when you're in your family, it's like your brothers are fighting, you leave your socks out, it's not a big deal.
No.
When you're on a bus with other people that
it's,
you know,
a whole different atmosphere.
Yeah, yes. You know what? There's something that you learn being on the road. Now, I not that I was, I guess, you know, I knew how to travel. I knew how to travel on a bus.
Yes.
But I think it's the not realizing that this is not my family. There's some, everybody has a bit of a different motivation. You know, they're not here for me. You know, that becomes everybody's, you know, it's kind of everybody's for yourself.
Exactly.
And so you kind of got to look out for your, you got to look out for yourself on that.
That's true.
And I'd never really had to think about that before.
So it was quite a different on-taking or whatever. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. That atmosphere was, you know, was way different.
Exactly.
You're not in the safety of, and you know what, it's probably like if somebody going out on their own, maybe going to college and going, instead of staying in a dorm in college, because when I went to college, I still lived at home and I just commuted. So
yes.
I didn't have that community of dorm life. But this was my first on-the-road bus life experience and traveling with others. So very similar, though.
For sure, for sure. Going into your career a little bit, you have recorded a great tribute to Bill Monroe back in 2001. That is one of my all-time favorite songs. Share with us how Is the Grass Any Bluer on the Other Side came about.
Well, it was, you know, people would pitch you songs. And this came from what they call a song pitch. And a lady that I knew... She knew this song was written, and she sent it to me. I'd worked with her in country music years before.
Yes.
And a group of writers had gotten together just right after Bill Monroe passed away. And on that writing session that day, they said, let's write something. You know, Bill Monroe just passed away. Let's write something in tribute to him. And so they wrote that song. Here's the crazy thing. I think his name is Corey Batten. He's one of the writers on there.
Okay.
And he had came to Nashville, was writing songs, and had that dream of writing songs, being a Nashville songwriter. And he had been there, I guess, for quite a while. I don't know how long.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, that dream, he never got any songs recorded. This is later on, after I've recorded this, and this became Song of the Year and everything. And he said, I had given the day the publisher called him, he had packed his car up, and I want to say he was going back to Arizona someplace. His car was packed, and he was about to lock the door, get in his car, and drive away back, go back home and give up being a songwriter. And before he got to his car, they called him and said, Rhonda Vincent has recorded your song. So
yes.
Mine was the first turn. He's this amazing songwriter that's had all kinds of cuts now. And I love that that song was a pivotal.
It changed your life, and it also changed his life then.
Amen. Sure did.
Oh, that's
so
great.
I had no idea. But when we just recently performed that on the Grand Ole Opry 100. Yeah.
Yes. So share with us what it's like to be at the Grand Ole Opry and an official member of the Opry.
Oh, my. There's just nothing like it. You know, I love being there. But to walk in and just be, I don't know, I, you know, was really, really, still there's always this butterflies in your stomach.
Yes, I'd imagine.
When they say it's a family, it truly is a family. And it's like people reaching out. And if, you know, if you had a need or just the camaraderie and the family atmosphere and the encouragement. I mean, it is amazing. I never really understood. It's like, oh, it's an Opry family. Oh, wait a minute. I have my family. I don't know what you mean by Opry family. But when you become a member, there's an automatic embracement that these people embrace you and they support you, and it's just wonderful. I cannot be more thankful. That's just love being a member of the Opry, and I'm very thank you, Lord, for that opportunity.
Exactly, that's right, Rhonda, and it's a pleasure to see you on the Opry, or in my case, hear you on the Opry nightly. Yes.
Oh, yes. Nice. Yes. I love that we can hear it wherever we are.
Exactly, it's a lot easier nowadays to hear the Opry than it was back when I was a young lad, but it's all crystal clear now. Yes.
Yes.
Exactly. So this coming month of August, you're appearing here at the Spencerville South Grenville Bluegrass Festival in Canada.
I'm looking forward to that. I've never been there before.
Well, that's great.
Yes. I'm so excited. We have so many friends there.
Yes.
And the Adams family. And so, yeah, I can't wait.
For sure.
And I think Larry Stevenson is there with us. And,
that's right.
You know, he's a friend of ours. So it's like we're just bringing the friends with us and meeting new ones, hopefully.
Well, great, great. It'll be my first time seeing you, so I hope you do my song, Is the Grass Any Bluer?
Yes, be sure to remind me. I will try to make a note of that, but you know, if we don't, I just tell people, just yell it out. If you have a favorite song, we'll try to do it for you.
Oh, great, Rhonda. Yes, for sure. Okay. And so you were named the Queen of Bluegrass Music. Share with us what that means to you personally.
Well, that was in 2000, and that was my very first Rounder album, kind of my introduction to the, I guess, a worldwide bluegrass audience. They did a review of the album back home again, and I was like, I couldn't believe it when there was an article in the Wall Street Journal, and I didn't even know that the Wall Street Journal did reviews on music.
Exactly.
And here I am, and people, there's these men who are reading that, and they're coming to our shows in their suits, you know, after work, and yes. And but it was a wonderful thing, and it's talk about a title that has continued on to say you're one of Vincent, the new queen of bluegrass.
Yes.
And I guess I really didn't understand it until now. I see how people embrace it. And then there was an organization in Iowa, and a few years later, and they said, okay, you were proclaimed that by the Wall Street Journal, but we want to officially do a coronation of that.
Oh, nice.
And so they gave me this beautiful tiara, and people in their minds, I guess, think that I wear this tiara around all the time, waving as the queen of bluegrass. But, but it's just been, it's a wonderful, you know, it's a wonderful thing. It kind of describes what I do, who I am, and I've embraced it. I love it.
And it's a very deserving title for your career, too, yes.
Well, thank you.
Because you are also very well and very highly decorated award-wise, too.
I'm very, very thankful for, you know, that. I look at the awards, the Grammys, and I look at those as, you know, we work really hard, we create new music, and people, yes. It's like somebody saying, a job well done, good work.
Exactly.
And so we appreciate that.
Yes.
And I travel with award-winning musicians. They're all so very amazing. And you know, we just love them. We love bluegrass music and feel thankful that's what we get to do.
When you come up here, will you be driving or will you be flying up?
No, we should be in our, what we call our Bluegrass Express.
Oh, nice, nice. Yes, yes,
yeah,
great,
that's,
great.
That's our hope anyway.
Now, I also understand that you recorded a couple of duets with different people over the years, but including Gene Watson.
Yes, I did an all-duet project with Gene Watson. I've been fortunate to sing with some of the greatest singers
exactly.
in country music, and I also did another one with Daryl Singletary.
Yes,
and
you did.
I love singing with both of those guys. Miss Daryl. Most recently, about a year ago, I discovered that Zach Arnold, my guitar player, he sings the song One. It's the George and Tammy their reunion song, and
yes.
So we're able to put that in the show now, and I'm very excited for that.
So what is it like to sing with Gene Watson? I know you guys do a duet once in a while on the Opry. Like I said, listen quite often.
Yeah, I mean, I love singing with him. Like I say, one of the greatest voices. He's had over 70 charting songs.
Exactly.
He's a song guy. His songs are all so great.
Yes.
And so I always love a chance when I get to sing with him, and people love it. The very first time that we, you know, I went to his show, I guess it might have been 2000 and, I don't know, 8 or 9 maybe.
Okay.
Anyway, and I didn't get to meet him. The line was so very long. And so I got, and then the bus was leaving, so I left, but I met his manager, and he said, hey, Gene's recording a song, and we'd like you to sing some harmony on it. And so about a week or so later, I went in, and I still didn't get to meet him. He wasn't there. He lives in Texas. And so they said, we want you to sing from the very top of the song. Sing all the words from the top to the bottom, which seemed a little weird. I just sang it a couple of times, and not knowing what it was going to be, and he says the same surprise hit him.
Yes.
He had sang it by him solo. He said he thought he did a pretty good job, and he said, when he heard it next, he said, I was a duet. And then they were doing the Grand Ole Opry, the televised portion of the Grand Ole Opry. And it used to be, if you weren't there for the sound check, and they called it camera blocking in the afternoon, then you did not get to appear. You could not be on the show if you weren't there for that.
Oh, is that right?
I lived in Missouri at the time, and my flight was delayed, and I was so disappointed. Like, I thought I was finally going to get to meet Gene Watson and sing with Gene Watson, and my flight landed, and I literally got a taxi and just got to the Opry as soon as I could, walked in the door, and they were kicking off the song, and I walked from the just inside the door out, and they let me go out on the stage, and he and I sang the song together again that we recorded before we ever even said hello or got to meet.
Well, talk about
so
perfect
crazy.
Timing. Exactly.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Now, another song that we play quite often is a song called The Record Book.
Oh, love that song. I heard that totally by accident. There's a bluegrass band, Joe Mullins, and the Radio Ramblers and radio stations. He has Real Roots Radio. and I listen to the Hymns from the Hills that he has in the middle of the day, about noon every day. And that's when I heard the song, and I started crying. I was so awestruck by it that I got on a Facebook Live, and I just felt this immediate need to share. God, like I was fixing my hair and makeup. It wasn't even done. God said, drop what you're doing and go sing this song for people on Facebook. And I'm through my tears. You know, I sang this song and then ended up recording it with the Isaacs, and it's become one of our most requested.
And it's a deeply moving song too, Rhonda. Yes.
Yes, I love it so much. Yes. And it seems to affect others in the same way.
Exactly. So tell us what advice you would give to the up-and-comers.
Well, I mean, I see these days everything wants to be so instantaneous. And I guess I came up in a different kind of time. But I always tell people to, you know, perfect your craft. Take the time to perform no matter where you are. There might be like my dad, we always performed in a nursing home once a month.
Okay.
At our local nursing home. And you always, you know, no matter what else we're doing, you know, getting back to the community. But I always say there's a place to sing no matter what. You know, if you play or you sing, whatever you do, take every opportunity to play so that you've been through all these different circumstances. So when you do find yourself, you know, out here, and also don't, it's a lot of it, well, life is basically you make money and you spend money. And I see a lot of people like, I want a bus like yours, and I want every band member to have a hotel room, and I want, it's like, you can't do that starting out with. And
yeah.
So you have to, you know, kind of pace yourself and perfect your craft, perform, sing, and wait for that, you know, find that opportunity, that right opportunity. And when you do, you know, don't get crazy and don't get yourself in debt, you know, you've got to manage your life and manage your business.
So share with us about your new album. I know you have recently released one as of last year, but it also features Jeannie Seely.
Oh, that's right. There's so many guests on the album. Destinations and Fun Places. We'll be doing a lot of songs from that. It has so many guests. I don't know how we got them all on the same. We should have spaced this out on other projects.
Yes.
Jeannie Seely wrote a song for me called I Miss Missouri, My Home State. And so she wrote it 18 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And then she lost everything in the flood of 2010.
Yeah, she did.
And anyway, then she's the one who invited me to be a member of the Grand Ole Opry. And from that, we've become really close friends. Anyway, so those lyrics started coming back to her, and she invited Aaron Enderlin and I to come to her house, and we got to finish writing it, and I recorded it, and that's what gave me the idea. It's like, I miss Missouri. I wrote a list of songs. It became a game with the guys. It's like, how many songs are there that mentions a destination? You know, there's the song, How We Got to Memphis. We didn't end up doing that one, and
yes.
Somewhere Over the Rainbow, I recorded that. It didn't end up on the album, but
okay.
Every song, Margaritaville,
ended
up recording that, and Jeannie and Trisha Yearwood are on that song. Allison Krauss and I did a 7-minute version of Wagon Wheel.
And you did a beautiful
Sonia Isaacs,
a beautiful version of Country Roads on that as well.
Dolly and Cody Johnson,
yes.
And my fiddle player Adam Haynes, he created this beautiful string section that we get to play. There's lots of twin fiddles on there, so
it's
just a really fun project. I'm so thrilled.
So in closing today, what is your hopes for the South Granville Bluegrass Festival?
Well, I'm just excited I get to perform there, and I hope the weather's beautiful. You know, Bluegrass Festival our family affair. If someone has never been to a bluegrass festival and they're going, what exactly is that? You know, it's a place, it's really a place for fun and fellowship and usually great food. And I just look forward to seeing everyone and bringing great music there. We're going to have a fun day.
For sure. We sure will. Yes. I'm going to have you introduce the next song that we're going to play following this interview, but it is the song we just talked about, I Miss Missouri.
Here's a song my friend and Opry sister Jeannie Seely wrote especially for me about my home state. And you know what? It even includes the word squirrels. There's not many songs that have squirrel in it, but there's a few. Anyway, it's one called I Miss Missouri.
Sounds good, Rhonda.
Thank you.
God bless you. Have a good day.
Blessings.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
By the creek, watching squirrels play hide and seek. I miss Missouri. let's go to the fair.
Come on, boys, let's go to the fair. See the funny sights in the cool night air.
Hello, friends and listeners of Way Back. This here is your old host with most country western music, Johnny Whitlock. And I'd like to invite y'all out to the Fall Fair in Spencerville, Ontario, where it's all happening this fall from September 11th to the 14th, featuring some of the best in live entertainment, including names like Amanda Keeley, as well as Saturday night's headliners, the Roadhammers. And those more traditional country music fans will love Sunday afternoon as they celebrate the finest in country music, including our Queen of the Ottawa Valley, Miss Gail Gavin. So this is one event you won't want to miss. Also featured throughout the weekend is the Old Time Tractor and Truck Polls, both Saturday and Sunday, as well as the Midway for those who love the rides. So come one, come all to the 170th anniversary of the Spencerville Fair, happening September 11th to 14th. That's Thursday to Sunday. For more information, visit spencervillefair.ca, and I hope to see y'all out there.
Come on, board, let's go to the fair.
Oh, yeah, they're going to the big fair in town. Well, they got some of the funniest things you ever saw.
And yes, friends, following that interview with our guest of honor, Miss Rhonda Vincent, the queen of bluegrass music, we're back. And it's once again that time to announce that those tickets for the South Granville Bluegrass Festival are still available, and you can grab yours today by going to the gate, or you can win yours now with answering the next question. And that question is, what year did Father of Bluegrass Music, Bill Monroe, first form his bluegrass festival, and where was it located? The first ones to call me with the correct answer win these tickets for the South Granville Bluegrass Festival's special appearance by Miss Rhonda Vincent. With that, call now and claim your tickets at 1-613-861-5713. You'll be glad to take advantage of this great opportunity to see the Queen of Bluegrass. And if you can't get me on the phone, just email me at waybackwoodlock@gmail.com. Welcome in, friends. Also, the next song will be the Wayback Song of the Week, and that is by none other than, yes, our beloved father of bluegrass, William Smith Monroe, Bill Monroe, and his all-time classic titled When the Cactus Is in Bloom. With that, get on those phones, friends, because you want to win these tickets to the Saturday afternoon Rhonda Vincent at the South Granville Bluegrass Festival.
The cattle prowl and the cow tail out on the great divide. I never done no wrong, singing the song and down the trail I ride. The rattle takes rattle at the prairie dog, don't you hear that morning poo too? For the roundup time way out west when the cactus are in bloom. Daylight comes and the cow and yell, they call out every man. I throw my saddle on my old cow horse, I drink my coffee from a can. The sun goes down on the cattle trail, I'm gazing at the moon. For the roundup time, way out west when the cactus are in bloom. The boys have gone away, but they will be back soon. For the roundup time, way out west when the cactus are in bloom. Daylight comes and the cow and yell, they call out every man. I throw my saddle on my old cow horse, I drink my coffee from a can. The sun goes down on the cattle trail, I'm gazing at the moon. For the roundup time, way out west when the cactus are in bloom.
Yes, friends, we have once again reached the end of another Way Back with Johnny Woodlock show here at the Way Back with Johnny show here on CFRC 119 FM and also www.oshawarocks.com in the Greater Toronto Area. I would like to thank each and every one of my special guests for joining me today on this morning program dedicated to the 10th anniversary of the South Grenville Bluegrass Festival. I'd also like to thank you, my many listeners, for tuning into the program today. I would like to congratulate the winners on the tickets to the South Grenville Bluegrass Festival, who we will announce next weekend. With that, I also hope to see a lot of my listeners out at the Bluegrass Festival supporting our beloved music and local entertainers, as well as the legends coming in from out of town. I'd like to play us home today with two final songs this morning. First will be a man who we have been mentioning a lot of during this program today. That, of course, is none other than Ralph Stanley and his brother Carter Stanley, and it's going to be a song called Angel Band. Then we'll give Miss Rhonda Vincent the honors of closing out today's program with a song of hers, which is going out to my dear friend Willie LaPointe, the mayor of Verona, and it's going to be a favorite song of his that she recorded titled There Is a Record Book. With that, I would like to share that we will be back here next weekend, same great time, same great place, as we pay tribute to some more, this time, country legends. With that, may God bless each and every one of you till we meet again. And yes, I hope and pray to see y'all out safely at the Bluegrass Festival in Spencerville, at the South Grenville Bluegrass Festival's 10th anniversary. And also a special thank you to Kim and Lisa for inviting me out. With that, may God keep and bless each one of you till we meet again. So long for now, friends, and happy listening.
for every deed I do.
Friends and listeners, this here is your old host with most, Johnny Woodlock, reporting for Way Back with Johnny over this great channel. The previous show does not represent anything associated with the channel heard on. It is the sole associate of Woodlock Ranch Studios, Cornwall, Ontario. With that, have a great day, and we'll catch y'all next week. So long, friends.
Is here if you will.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
Broadcasting 24/7, 365, you're listening to 101.9 FM and CFRC.